Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you.
And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, where honestly, we are searching every day for more and more things that we've never, ever seen before. And in light of that, I received some fun pictures by email, and I said, well, Bill, we got to have this on the show. So everybody, welcome Bill from Pennsylvania House Link to the show.
Woohoo! Thank you.
So tell all the listeners where you're located, how long you've been doing real estate, any of those fun little detail-y pieces.
Cool. So we are in our 13th year in selling real estate. My wife and I started out as real estate investors, real long story there. But probably for the past 11 plus years, we've been in the REO side of the business, so the distressed property side of the business.
So if you're a consumer listening, REO is real estate agent talk for foreclosures. So you hear us say REO, you hear foreclosure.
Correct. And kind of grouped in with that is, you know, would also probably be estate properties and short sale properties, basically anything that would be considered distressed, if you will.
Or we just say it needs love, might need more love than others, right? Okay. So before you tell the world about your fun angle of the business here and what you discovered, there's two ground rules of the podcast. It's very laid back. You can pretty much say most salty words, but you can't use the F-bomb, GD, or see you next Tuesday, because I'm allergic to those three hateful words. And if there are guilty parties that ever are involved in your story, don't name them, give them a fake name, or just skip over the fact that there are people involved. So with that being said, tell the world what they don't know is out there that you found that you didn't realize was out there either.
Dealing with, I don't know, 50 to 60, 70 properties a year, you kind of see a little bit of everything. I'm going to give you a glimpse into the most recent one. So for the most part, a lot of consumers, the general public, they kind of don't understand what a foreclosure is. Sometimes they'll, you know, let's see, fix and flip, and they'll look at the, you know, what they consider to be a foreclosure there. But when these banks assign the foreclosures or the assets to the real estate agents, we generally have to go out and do what's called an initial oc check. So last week I got an assignment. It was in Levittown, Pennsylvania, I'm not sure what his first name was, John Levitt. He was responsible for making all those tract homes back in the 50s, and this is part of that. First thing I do is I always go up and I knock on the door, and generally, whether there's somebody there or not, they do not answer. In this particular case, I could tell that the property was vacant, which is always good. It's always rough when you knock on the door and somebody starts shooting at you. No, that never has happened yet, but it probably will.
Well, you are in Pennsylvania. It's not like you're in one of those gun-free zones or anything. You know, there's no guns there.
No, it's not like Texas, wherever, or Georgia, where everybody carries. But yeah, it's probably a story for another day. But yeah, generally, people that have been foreclosed on don't have a very good outlook on life, so you never know what to expect. And it's always good when you show up to a property and the property has been vacated. However, in this particular case, I knocked on the door and there wasn't an answer, but all the windows were open. And for anybody that was watching the news over the past couple of weeks in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area, that's where we're out of. There was a little snowstorm, so it was probably about 6 inches of snow on the ground, but all the windows were open in this house. So at any rate, I knocked on the front door. Front door was not open, so I walked around back, knocked on the back door. There was no answer, but there was a window right next to there. The window was open. So as I often have to do, I climbed through the window to make sure that the property was safe and vacant. And as I go to climb through the window, I'm hearing a funny waterfall sound. So which is not supposed to happen, in case you didn't know that. So as I ventured into that was an addition part. As I ventured into the main part of the house, there was a waterfall coming down through the second floor into the first, and there was probably, I don't know, a few inches of water on the floor.
So you say waterfall, we're not talking like a constant drip, a small leak. We're talking massive movement of water.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Can we, do you do show notes? Can you link up a video in the show notes?
Oh, I do have show notes. We haven't had video in anybody else's, so yours can be special. Absolutely. Send me that link and we'll include it.
I like being special. Okay, yeah, we'll send you the link. But yeah, as I walk into the living room, actually the kitchen first, kitchen and dining room are next to each other. There is a massive amount, look like a waterfall, coming down through the second floor right into the first. Now, these properties, most of the properties in Pennsylvania, for the most part, have basements, at least in the Philadelphia area. These track houses do not have basements. So the water was just accumulating as I was trudging through. And of course, I'm guessing that it probably had been that way for a while because all of the ceiling was now laying on the first floor.
And you have to describe, too, the water that you saw, because that picture you sent me looked like a winter wonderland.
So, again, it's rather chilly in the Philadelphia area. So when I went to that house, it was probably in the teens at the time. And again, hopefully we can link this up in the show notes and I'll get you some pictures. But as I walked into, there's two bedrooms on the first floor, two bedrooms on the second floor. As I walked into the bedroom on the first floor, it did. It looked like a winter wonderland. There were icicles hanging down. There was a chaise lounge that was just completely encased in ice. So it was quite cool, actually. I'm not sure how we're going to get that cleaned up and cleaned out, but yeah, it was very cool.
So I don't live in a cold area, being in North Carolina. So what is the challenge with mold in a house that's had that kind of water in it, knowing that it's in the teens? Does that preclude the mold issue?
When you're dealing with distressed properties, that word that you just said is a very bad word.
Well, that's true. We do like to say fungal growth instead.
organic growth is also good.
Yes. If you're a consumer, as an excellent point Bill made, we don't use the word mold, but if you hear us talk about fungal growth or organic growth, it's pretty much like mold's cousins, or maybe mold, but we can't confirm
mold, right?
Or deny.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we're not professional mold people.
Right.
Or fungal growth
right.
people.
We are not property inspectors, and we would ask that you consult the expertise yes. of somebody that can identify that. But yeah, no, that is a very good point. I mean, the problem is that it's only going to stay cold for so long. Previous couple of weeks to that, it was rather warm. It was actually in the 70s. So we're not exactly sure if the ex-owner decided to vacate the house and kind of just leave the water running, or if it actually got that cold and a pipe broke. So not sure which one. We're leaning towards the latter, just because people are generally not that destructive. I tell you what we did find out is, after calling the water company to come out and shut the water off at the curb, we did find out that 168,000 gallons had gone through the meter. I think
Say that again. Because I just had to absorb that for a second. How many gallons?
168,000 gallons.
Now, in Levittown, do they punish you and charge you for 100 and that many gallons of sewer at the same time as water? Because like around here, they kill you on water and sewer bills when you have a leak.
Right. So again, typically from years of experience and having similar issues in the past, generally what we'll do is we'll go back to the water company. And the water company, there's nothing you can do about it. If 168,000 gallons went through their meter, that's what they're going to charge you for. However, the water did not go through the sewer system, so we can, you know, we can probably go back and get some sort of a discount on the sewer, but that's probably equal to, you know, three or four pools getting filled up, I would think. I don't have a pool, but somewhere in that area.
But if you had a pool, I mean, you had a house now that could fill it up, honestly.
Absolutely. And if this house would have been completely watertight, I bet you would have filled the house up without any problem. So, but getting back to your question on the fungal growth, the organic growth in the house, yeah, that's always going to be a problem. And in this particular case, this house will need to be stripped down completely. And the remediation company sent in and to cure any potential issues going forward.
So this house actually gives us a great example of why foreclosures and short sales and distressed houses are sold as is, because, you know, I'm curious about fungal growth coming in later when you've had this kind of a water issue, but we don't know when this house will finally hit the market and when somebody will buy it. And you can tell somebody that it flooded, but you can't tell them what's coming next. So you got to think about that if you're buying properties like this. But if you're a realtor representing people in as-is stuff too, this is also why it doesn't do you any good to call and argue with us when we're listing a foreclosure property about it being as-is, because we don't know.
Yeah, and at least in Pennsylvania, you know, banks are not required to disclose.
Yeah, same thing in North Carolina. And frankly, you don't blame them because what? How could they disclose? What would they know? They didn't live there. They don't know if it was, like you said, the former homeowner being angry and vandalizing or just a rough break of luck that the water went.
Exactly. And from a consumer standpoint, and you know, we understand that, you know, we're getting calls on a daily basis because we have these properties listed that, you know, the typical consumer is finding us one way or another, either by our postings on the property or by our videos. We do videos on it on every single property. And that's more of a CYA than anything. But we post all our videos so that you can see them. And, you know, the issue is that the typical consumer, they think they're getting a good deal by buying a foreclosure. And that is a possibility. But in this day and age, the banks that have these assets, and by the way, the bank that originally took the mortgage out, and I know you know this, but for the consumer benefit, the bank that originally issued the mortgage on the property, when it gets foreclosed on, that is not the same entity. That is not the same bank. So they're
long gone. Even if it was the originating mortgage bank, which oftentimes it's not, because I mean, how many people have had their own mortgages sold three times while they lived in the house? Then toss it to an asset manager, and you're exactly right. There's not a good train there for anybody to tell you anything.
Oh, right. Exactly. And then, you know, two things, at least in this area right now, the banks are also watching HGTV, if you can believe that, and they are repairing some of their own properties. So they're actually going in and rehabbing these properties and then listing them at fair market value.
Which is a wonderful trend, because that means owner-occupants can get these houses and they don't have to just go to investors. And so it helps communities get stabilized.
Correct. Well, now, I'm gonna take a different approach or a different take on that, too. A lot of times, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, selling the property as is, having the investor go in and purchase the property, from my standpoint, is a more economic boom than even just having a homeowner come in and purchase the property. The investors generally are subcontractors, so they hire contractors. They purchase all the product. You know, they have labor that they're paying. They pay taxes. They pay a transfer tax when they buy it. Then they pay another transfer tax when they sell it. So strictly speaking, from an economic standpoint, and I'm going to back up one second, they also sell it at a premium for the most part. So when you really look at that, having an investor come in to a neighborhood and doing a good rehab, now again, there's good and bad, right? But generally, the investors that we work with do really good work. They come in and they actually up the value of the properties.
Well, that's a great point. And it's also true there are good and bad investors, because there's the people who prey on old people with a handwritten note and try and steal their houses from them. And then there are the people who come into a house that nobody else would ever think of, rehab it, and pump all that money into the local economy. It's a great standpoint to look at.
Oh, yeah. And again, you gotta go on and look at some of the before and after videos. You know, again, when we go into these properties initially, we video everything. And then if it's one of our investors that purchased the property, we generally get to list it after it's done. And the transformation on some of these is really, it's just astronomical. Like, you would never believe it was the same house. And getting back to this Levittown property, we did one at the beginning of 2016. This is a one-off investor, so he literally does all the work himself. Took him a year, but the transformation is just really unbelievable. And again, I think it's an economic benefit to everybody, to at least to the neighborhood, for you know, because again, these guys are, you know, they're paying roofers, they're paying tile people, they're paying all the subs, and You know, all those subs pay taxes, and, you know, it isn't just that one-off piece.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. And so as somebody who is super involved and has been for years in the investor side of the business, what's the one piece of advice that you give to either realtors who want to be like your one-off guy, they maybe want to try a house and work their way through it, or they just, you know, want to do a little bit on the side, or to the consumer who wants to learn how to do this process? What's the beginning advice you give them?
From a consumer standpoint, if you're an investor, you really, really need to find an investor real estate agent. Now we're all licensed to do, you know, to sell property in our, you know, whatever state we're in, which means we can sell investment property, we could sell commercial property, we can sell residential property, we can sell anything we want to sell. But just because you can do it doesn't make you qualified or capable to.
Amen, amen, amen. Preach on, hallelujah. Exactly, exactly. Now go ahead and carry on. I just had to give you an amen for that.
Well, thank you. So the issue is that there are a lot of there's a lot of nuances that go along with investment real estate. And what everybody, you know, most of the investors that you deal with that call you on a daily basis, you know, they're looking for the best. They're looking for the best price on a house for the two types of investment real estate. So you're either buying it to hold it, you know, and then rent it, or you're buying it to rehab it and then resell it. So, you know, a lot of people look at what they, you know, how much they should buy it for, rather than coming at it from the opposite, which is how we do it. And we do a analysis and we say, you know what, here's, I'm going to throw out some terminology here. So a lot of investors use what's called ARV. Have you've heard of that before?
Yes, because I'm one of those investor realtors, but not everybody else out there is. So give them the lowdown.
Okay, so most agents have heard of, or agents that have worked with investors have heard of ARV, and ARV is basically after repair value. The problem is that after repair value, in my opinion, again, is nebulous, if you will. What I want to do as an investor, and I am a real estate investor, by the way. So, what I want to do is I want to establish what we call a QRV, and that's a quick resale value. And the quick resale value basically says, once this property goes on the market, it's going to sell in 30 days. And my job as the investment agent representing our client, the investor, is to get their house, get their property sold quickly so that they can move on to the next one and basically repeat the process. So establishing that QRV, you can't price a property without knowing what it should sell for. And then the experience piece comes in that says, well, you know, okay, let's just take one of these Levittown houses. You know, generally these Levittown houses are 3 bedrooms, 1 bath. In a lot of the models, there's specific places where you can get another bath in there. Well, if you put another bath in these, and you can make it a master suite or an ensuite, that adds a massive amount of value. So you have an investor that will just go in and they'll do, you know, paint and carpet, and they think that they can get the same price as somebody that's actually gone over and above, has added value to that property, and it just doesn't happen if all you're doing is just going in and, again, doing the paint and the carpet thing. Now, the other problem, the other issue that you always run into now, probably 90% of the time when you're bidding on a foreclosure property, it's not the bank that you're bidding against or bidding with. It's other investors. So at least in our area right now, there is no inventory. I don't know how it is down there, but, you know, generally, if a house is priced correctly, it's on the market for less than a week right now.
And we're the same, especially under 250,000, because when you're under that mark, that's where you wind up seeing more of this kind of property. But I am telling my investors right now, because it's so easy to overpay if you're bidding, because that emotion gets wrapped up in that of, I want to win, especially for the smaller investor who does a few projects throughout the year. The big guys know how to hold back. The small guys have a harder time, in my opinion. But now's a great time to be stockpiling some cash, because the next downturn is going to come sometime in the next, you know, 1 to 2 years. We don't know when the next hiccup will happen. But you've got to have a good cash position so that you can capitalize the next time we dip. Because when we're up right now, it might be best to hold back a little bit, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah. You know, again, here's what you got to do is you have to set and know your criteria, and you can't deviate from that.
So, and that's why you need a good experienced realtor in your corner.
100% correct. And here I'll give you a prime example. There's an area that we cover. It's called King of Prussia. So there's King of Prussia Mall, which is a very, very large mall, but there's also a ton of pharmaceutical companies in that area. So the area, for the most part, is usually pretty hot. So we get an assignment. We get a foreclosure property. And without going through the whole big, long litany of what goes on, we said that the property should be listed 235. That was our, what we call BPO, broker price opinion, on what the property would be worth as is condition. So again, the bank did the analysis on this, and they were going to repair it, but then they decided to sell it as is. And again, what we try to do is we try to set a price that we know is going to get a lot of activity. And as you know, if you get a lot of activity, you get multiple offers. Anytime you're in a bidding situation, the prices escalate, right? So on this particular one, we listed it at $235,000. It ended up selling in literally under a day for $275,000.
Wow. And we're seeing that all over the country right now, which is, you got to be able to stay under control.
Right. And again, now, you know, we had several investors interested in that property, and we know their criteria, you know, and we flat out told them. They said, you know, there's no way this property is worth what somebody is willing to pay. At that price, that's just crazy. But somebody bought it,
and they won, and they're happy, and everything works out for the best.
And I'm okay with it because it sold for $50,000 more than what I said it should sell for.
And you look like a hero, which is never a bad place to be in.
Exactly right.
Okay, so we went in several different directions this morning while we're chatting, and obviously for all my listeners, we went over the 15-minute mark. But I hope you got enough information to make this worthwhile, because if you're a realtor listening, you can see that getting into the investor side is going to require you to get some additional education, homework, maybe find a mentor so that you can be a very intelligent person advising people who want to invest in real estate. And if you are a consumer investor, for the love of all that's holy, ask the realtor that you talk to if they understand investments, whether they represent other investors or if they personally invest. I'm a big old snob because I say, you should use a realtor who is an investor because they understand it on a much more holistic level than somebody who has just happened to sell an investment house here and there. But
I'll give you a little trick, if you would. If you're an investor and you're looking for buy and hold property, so one something that you're going to rent out, if you're talking to a real estate agent, the first question that I would probably ask them is, if I purchase this property, how should I cost segregate it? And if they can't give you a direct answer to that question,
tell them thank you and bye bye.
Exactly correct. now, right now, there's hundreds of real estate agents scratching their head because they can't answer that question. But I would absolutely look to go to somebody that knows what they're doing. And again, it's different.
And if you're the one scratching your head, this is why you need to take extra classes and find a mentor so that you won't get caught off guard when somebody calls in.
Exactly correct.
Especially if you want to plan ahead to the next recession and you think you'd like to work with foreclosures, short sales, distressed properties, you need to know the language and understand how the numbers work, because it's different than the mom and pop home sale where you've got memo and the emotions and the decluttering and the staging. That's an entirely different discussion.
It completely different. Absolutely, completely different. Right. And again, that's the biggest thing is why I love doing this side of the industry is that there really isn't, there is no emotion involved. It's numbers. And if those numbers do not work, you do not proceed. It's just that easy.
Exactly. Okay. So Bill, if anybody's looking for an amazing realtor in Levittown / is it Pittsburgh? Isn't that near
Philadelphia?
Philly. I had the wrong P town. I can never get Pennsylvania right. So if they need somebody who can handle Levittown and knows that it was named after the guy who built the subdivisions, which cracks me up, and then they want somebody that could help them in Philly, how can they reach you and your team?
You can reach me directly, and I should probably know my Facebook and my LinkedIn. But actually, my SEO is pretty good. So if you Google Bill Hamburg in real estate, I will be the first three pages that come up. But my email address is bhamburg, B-H-A-M-B-E-R-G, at pahouselink.com. So it's pahouselink.com. Send me an email. I respond to all my emails. And much like some other REO agents, I actually pick up the phone and I enjoy talking to investors and people. So
that does make you kind of rare, you know.
Oh, trust me. I know, because I also work with investors on the purchase side. My peers, even when I identify myself, you know, and again, we did 70 transactions last year. So even when I identify myself, they still don't call you back.
So. I know, bless them, but that's fine. It creates more market share for the ones that do it really well, like you. And we already mentioned we'd have some of the Winter Wonderland crazy pictures in the show notes. But that's also where we'll have all of Bill's contact information. So if you didn't jot down his email address because you're driving, or you just really honestly weren't paying attention, because I know my realtors, then you can go to the show notes and pull it up anytime you need somebody. If you're a consumer in this part of Pennsylvania, there's obviously lots of reasons to call Bill and be very satisfied with that decision. Bill, thank you for coming on the show and for sharing with us some of these angles of the investor side of real estate. I think some people are going to maybe learn something and improve their business from this, and some consumers might take the leap.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thank you so very much.
If you're listening to this show and you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or a consumer who's got your own crazy story about dealing with real estate, send me a note at Lee Brown on Twitter or any of the social networks, and you can be featured on a future episode. Subscribe for more. We try to come out Tuesdays and Fridays when we have episodes all lined up, and you don't want to miss one of these stories about crazy life in real estate. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit crazyshitinrealestate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.